Okay, today is December 14th, 2022. My name is Eric Adonis. I am the Special Collections Director at Champlain College, and I'm here with Christina Erickson. Christina, thanks so much for doing this interview today. And I guess I will just jump right into the questions,
Okay.
and then we can take it from there. So what is your current position at Champlain?
Sure. I am currently the Director of Service and Sustainability Learning.
So what department is that a part of?
It has been part of the Academic Affairs branch of the side of the House of Champlain.
And who do you currently report to?
Currently, I report to Rebecca Mills.
How long have you worked in your current position? And if you've held other positions or things have evolved during your time here at Champlain, could you speak to that evolution?
Yeah, certainly. I think it's easier to kind of start at the beginning
Okay.
and go to the present,
Yeah.
because of, and that's how I have the story in my head. So it tells a little bit about the other parts of the story. But I started in the fall of 2009, and I was a half-time position as a sustainability coordinator, reporting up through finance and administration. I did that for 1 year, and simultaneously was finishing my doctorate at UVM, and my daughter was born on commencement day, so I missed my graduation, but that's cool, don't mind. And then I asked the then Vice President of Finance and Administration if he would consider, and that was David Provost, excuse me, if he would consider making it a full-time position. Well, full-time at 10 months. And he was convinced, yes, that was a good idea. So then I kind of came back, August 2010 as a full-time 10-month sustainability coordinator. And then somewhere around 2014, and the details are it's around 2014, we created and shifted things with what was then parking became a transportation department of one, and put a position together called the Sustainable Transportation Coordinator, and we hired Nick Anderson into that position. And so Nick reported to me for 2 years. So then, because I had a supervisee, I got a promotion to be the sustainability director, still under finance and administration. And then fast forward a couple of years, and we can get into this a little more about kind of the different centers and pieces. I created a proposal to merge, morph, evolve into the Center for Service and Sustainability, and that went under the Academic Affairs side, then reporting to Dean Laurel Bongiorno in the EHS, and I became the Director of Service and Sustainability Learning, and that is the current title that I hold. Lots of words, lots of changes. And a lot of my proposing different things, and I was really grateful that I was able to do that.
So before we get into the different programs and initiatives that you've been involved with, I want to ask a couple of kind of questions that take you back to the beginning of your time here at Champlain. So what brought you to Champlain College?
There was a phone call. Then, let's see, he was the Associate Vice President for Campus Planning and Auxiliary Services, Michelle George, called my then supervisor at University of Vermont, Joya Thompson. Hey, do you know someone who might want to really work in student engagement and sustainability? She looked over at me. She said, Christina, you want to go talk to the people at Champlain? I said, all right. So I waddled down here. No, I guess I wasn't pregnant yet. But I came over and had an interview with Michelle, with Sarah Cohen, who worked in the library, and Rob Williams, who taught and all sorts of things. And they were part of this beginning of what is now known as Sustain Champlain. And so I was, third year of my doctorate, knowing that I was wanting to do something. I had been doing my fellowship, or my, yeah. I guess graduate fellowship in the Office of Sustainability at UVM and running the EcoReps program there. So really into student engagement, liking higher ed, thinking, not really sure where I was going to go with my doctorate. This opportunity came up. It was in Burlington. I liked Burlington. I'd lived there now for 4 years, 3 years at that point. And I was like, yeah, this sounds great. So, and it was right down the road and easy to come, and people seemed really nice. So I came and they hired me.
So what were your first impressions of Champlain?
Gosh, and it's so funny. I mean, all of a sudden, that was a while ago. My first impressions were a lesson in contrast. So again, I had just been at University of Vermont, largest institution in the state. Prior to that, I had worked at Sterling College for 6 years, which is the smallest institution in the state and the second smallest four-year school in the country. So I was coming from teeny to big to Champlain was a happy middle. And there was something about the student body that was, it felt different than the UVM student body that I interacted with, but I still can't necessarily find the adjectives to describe those differences, but it was different. I really loved and love still the scale of this, you know, small to mid-size organization where you know people. It's very similar to the scale of school where I went to undergrad. So, I liked that. I still like that. And I just, that was a strong impression on me of like people knew each other, they cared about each other. And I felt like when I came in too, there was this, culture of like, yeah, let's try stuff. And these words were used all the time and still sometimes now, like we're innovative, we're nimble, we're not UVM, we're not stodgy, we can do stuff in a different way. And I really appreciated that. So I think that those were some of my first impressions.
So I know you've been involved with a number of, let's call them programs as a kind of a generic term. So I want to take a moment and just ask you about a few of these initiatives and ask you to tell me about the mission and a little bit about the history of how they came about. So would it work to start with Sustain Champlain?
Yeah, so that started initially as a faculty staff student committee, and they called themselves the Post-Carbon Committee. So again, this was Sarah Cohen, Rob Williams, and I'm not sure if there's anyone that remains at Champlain that was part of that original. A lot of them were here for many, many years, and we sort of, when the voluntary retirement program, there was just a lot of turnover. So I'm not sure, and forgive me to anyone who I might be overlooking, but I'm trying to reel through the memory deck here. So they, Sarah and Rob and a bunch of students and various faculty and staff were like, you know, there's this, we know we should be doing more as an institution. And so they started this committee. And I think they recognized quickly, as many other institutions did right around that same time, 2005, 2006, that there's enough work that this should be someone's job. So they initiated the creation of that half-time sustainability coordinator position. And that was filled by a guy named Gabe Calvi, who was there for a year and decided he'd rather be a farmer than an office dude. So, and he's a great person that I've known a little bit through the years. So that, I think right around when Gabe came in was this kind of shift of the name to Sustain Champlain. They designed the logo, which is still used today. Like I really credit those folks with thinking about this kind of holistic program. And then when I came in, I helped really, I think, distinguish it and use the language that is found in sustainability in higher education, which has really become a field in itself. So our program evolved as the nationally, internationally, as kind of campus sustainability has evolved in itself. So that is and is Sustain Champlain, which continues with us. And the way I describe it is kind of a campus-wide initiative that really focuses on institution, academics, operations, and culture. It's kind of the four main buckets of where that all ties into.
Thank you. So now I know you're also involved with something that's currently called the Center for Service and Sustainability. Could you tell me a little bit about the mission of that center and how that's evolved over time.
Sure. And so, you know, this center came around because there were a various number of moving parts, which is, I think, how a lot of things happen sometimes, and especially small organizations. So there was an existing, and it was called the Center for Service and Civic Engagement, which had been part of what was then called Student Life for many years. And just the brief history, as I understand it, is that was started by a woman named Nancy Cathcart, who was at Champlain for many, many years. And then she left Champlain. Kyle Dodson came in, and he was the director for many years, and various folks like Maggie Melvin, big part of it for many years also. So Kyle left the college. Maggie shifted to the Women's and Gender Center when that started. And there was this opportunity, and I was also at the same time kind of feeling this need for another way to engage students, because I was finding it in pockets and ways, but not in the co-curricular way side of life. It was kind of hard to reach a lot of people. And so I was looking at service learning as a way of integrating sustainability into more of the classes, so students get it whether they like it or not. And Champlain had a history of service learning. So when Nancy Cathcart started the Center for Service and Civic Engagement, she too was really using the vehicle of service learning, of integrating different concepts and kind of priorities into classes, and really utilizing, maximizing what I understand to be part of the Champlain way of teaching, which is really highly experiential and really connecting with a lot of community partners. And so it was just a way to formalize that. So she really built that, the bedrock on the foundation, and even formalized language with Faculty Senate. And so I had started conversations with Kyle even when he was still here, and kind of, you know, what could be. And so when all of those parts were moving around, it was like, okay, well, can we rethink and kind of combine some of these pieces? So combining the service and some of the pieces that the original Center for Service and Civic Engagement held, like some one-off service events for kind of co-curricular service volunteer stuff in the community, service trips. So a longstanding trip to Uganda to a really wonderful organization called the Malaika House, and voter engagement. And so I saw those kind of pieces as important to hold on to, and overlapping the sustainability piece and really thinking about how and where that can happen in the curriculum and the academic side of life. So using the kind of big framework of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which are really broad, and there's something there for everybody, and all those things from no poverty to reduced inequalities to clean air, clean water, it's all sustainability. So I felt like that could be a framework that we use in service learning. So all of the service learning is connected to at least one or more of those goals, so it's all sustainability. And it all kind of comes together under this one, lots of little parts under this one broader umbrella of service and sustainability. So it's a bit murky. It's a lot of different little bits, but do all fit under that broad umbrella of sustainability when I think of it and try to articulate this to others under that sustainable development goal umbrella.
So can you, do you remember about the timing of about when that switch happened?
Yeah, that was 2016.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So another initiative that I know you've been closely involved with is the Green Revolving Fund. Mm-hmm. So that was also my list to ask you about, mm-hmm. in terms of the mission, and maybe if you could give us a couple examples, mm-hmm. of projects that have benefited from that fund.
Yeah, I think this is a really a neat story, because Green Revolving Funds were tools used by many businesses, municipalities, college campuses as a way to fund and keep funding energy efficiency projects on campus or within one's sector. So we were approached originally by folks from the Vermont Energy Investment Corporation, and they had worked on some campus sustainability projects throughout the state. And they said, you know, we think this could be a useful tool for you all. So we're like, all right, let's try that. So Ken was this broader Sustain Champlain committee of many faculty and staff and students that have always kind of participated in different ways. We worked to get two individual donations, both at $20,000, so that was $40,000. And then our goal was to get up to $100,000 to start. So we were able to convince a little bit that a portion of a Burlington Electric Department rebate that came in for the construction of Juniper Butler and Valcor, basically to use that to get up to $100,000. So we were able to peel out $60,000 from that rebate to get to our $100,000. So with that, we built a protocol and really used, actually, I think we looked at Dartmouth College's guidelines as one that kind of best fit what we were looking for, which really outlined two things. It was, you know, the majority of the money should go towards energy efficiency projects where there's a clear return on investment. It's pretty easily trackable. And because Champlain did not and really does not maybe have a pool of money like other campuses do, it might be through green funds or different things for students or others to apply to say, like, I've got a project idea, I would like to do this, but it is not one that has to be paid back. So that was and still currently remains the process, is there the energy efficiency projects are basically loans to the facilities budget that get paid back at 110%. And that's where we get a little bit of revolving aspect because in theory and in practice and the financial accounting pieces makes this a little, like the systems that we have in place make it a little hard to do all this, but we track it best we can. They should also be seeing operational savings because, you know, the lighting is better. So it's more efficient, less dollars to pay for the heating, the lighting bill over a year. So the facilities, physical plant projects get paid back at 110%. The community fund projects are more grants. They do not require payback. They don't have to show a return on investment over a certain number of years. And they tend to be smaller dollar projects, maybe, you know, a couple hundred dollars to a couple thousand dollars. So the real magic happens is that there is a committee of approximately 10 people, faculty, staff, and students, who are managing this fund and get to hear the project pitches from anyone. And they have come from all of the above, faculty, staff, and students. And they come and they say, like, we have an idea, we've got this. The committee asks questions, provides feedback, and sometimes it's like, yes, this is great, we want to fund this right now. More often it's like, we like this, but have you thought about this, 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 and this? And most times people have come back and then those projects are funded. And so it's, the process has been really cool. I have heard both from students participating on the committee, they're like, it was amazing to like be on the other side of the table to like hear the pitches and hear the decision-making process and be part of that and understand a little more of the behind the scenes, to the students and others who have pitched projects being like, it was really helpful to get that feedback and go through this and understand that there is a process. There's a lot more going on in these systems that many people realize because they're just not involved in that. So a few projects that I've, you know, that we've done through the years are anything from the viewing window in the apiary, because when the apiary was built 10 years ago and opened, there was a decision to put a stockade fence around it to protect the bees or have people, whatever. Not sure who's protecting who, maybe both. But you could see into it. And Kristen Wolf, who is the amazing person who runs the apiary, you know, either for class visits or just people walking by, like, you want that opportunity to see in there. So we did a little bit of a retrofit and the Green Revolving Fund paid for the viewing window, and then actually later on an interpretive sign to go there. So it's an educational opportunity, even if Kristen's not there delivering one of her wonderful, wonderful programs, but people can still look and engage with that. So that was a very cool project. Let's see, a student project. We had one last year that was really phenomenal, and you know, it's not, is it perfect? No, but it's a excellent learning opportunity and process. And so we had a environmental studies and policy capstone project proposal to build an aquaculture system. So this is fish tank, and ideally the fish waste goes and serves as the fertilizer to grow vegetable starts in a soil-less structure. So the Green Revolving Fund committee really liked this idea, and because it would be a living lab opportunity that's very visible, it's on the tour site, it's in the commuter lounge at CCM, like, so here's a project that people can see, because some of the things we do, you never see. So very visible, very tangible. And so that was funded. And, you know, the big number one question every time somebody pitches a project is like, this is great, you're about to graduate, who's going to take care of it when you leave? Every time that is asked to any student, and not just any student question, but like anybody, like, who's going to take care of this in the long run? So we gave credit because the student had classmates who were not yet to graduate who were involved in the environmental club, and they agreed to do the maintenance over the summer and then through the year. And so it is nice to see the kind of progression and the pass off happening. And of course, there's always opportunity for whatever. Hopefully that'll still happen. The fish tank needs a little work right now, but they're learning. It is visible. It's very cool. So that was great. So that was Kyle Harrison's project, who graduated last year. And the students now working on it are, I think, learning a lot about how it takes. So those are things that happen through the Green Revolving Fund. And it has been this really cool incubator space for project ideas, and some that have a really high degree of visibility and interactivity, which is cool.
So you've mentioned a couple of projects that are highly visible. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you could talk about one or two that are kind of more infrastructure related or behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, one, and this I was really minimally involved in, and certainly the planning or development of, because it was way before my time, right when I was coming in, and much more technical. I am not an engineer. I'm not that kind of thing. So our geothermal system is a great example. And this, for heating and cooling, and we're up to 7 buildings. It will now be 8 buildings now that McDonald Hall is being renovated and connected to that. So you can see wellheads, but most people have no idea what they are. So it's this underground system where it is drawing groundwater from several hundred feet below us. There's nothing added or taken away from the water, and it just cycles through a number of heat pumps or electric pumps throughout the building. Again, very, very simplistic description of that. But my role that I've played in that were things like, Perry Hall was our first application for this. And when that building was opened, part of the LEED certification through the U.S. Green Building Council, which is Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. I may flip my E's around. Anyway, it's a rating system for green buildings. Perry Hall was rated at platinum. One of the ways that we earned points to get that was to have some level of interpretation of the building and kind of what makes it a green building. And so that I was tasked with that project to like build, you know, create this booklet. And one of the layout pages is describing that geothermal system. And then another project that I did that I love and is still with us now are the series of kind of what we called green walk signs. So interpretive signs, there are about 13 or 14 around campus that describe some of those things that you can't see or give a little more information about why it is that's there. So I think the geothermal example is a big one. And another kind of mini interpretive sign that we've done for the rest of the buildings is just a small sign at the main entry of each building that says this building is heated and cooled by geothermal, because you wouldn't know anyhow what way, unless you are the, you know, technician or engineer that either built it or maintains it. So that's an example. Oh, it's fun to think about those. That was so long ago.
Thank you. No, it was great to hear about all this. So the last program on my list that I wanted to ask you about specifically is Social Impact Scholars. Mm-hmm. So, and I think this is a great lead in to a bigger question about how you have connected with students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Social Impact Scholars was really the brainchild of Eric Ronis and many people, faculty and staff. So started brainstorming, it was probably 6 years ago now, because the first kind of main, the cohort that came in 4 years ago will be graduating this year. My understanding and my recollection of those conversations, and Eric would be the one to answer like where it really came from. But I think there was this desire to like, and it was in the strategic plan too, of like, what are other ways that we can engage students and kind of help fulfill this mission of doing, speaking to some of the college's values. And so that became the Social Impact Scholars. And the idea was to, and this is what happened, is through the admissions process, the admissions counselors would note and flag applications where students said they are really involved in service, or there are different advocacy groups in high school or different things like that. And then Eric and then I started for a couple years, read applications and invited students to participate in what became the Social Impact Scholars. And the kind of original expectations were to have regular meetings and throughout the years have kind of different experiences for the that cohort in that class. Unfortunately, COVID really wiped out, two of the main years for that. So the hoped for like a third year experience was all going to be like a big service trip somewhere, and all of that really just got wiped out. So I think, unfortunately, that program really never got a good chance to flourish in its original intention. And then with Eric leaving last year, things changed again, and the future remains uncertain as to what will happen with that program. And my role kind of ebbed and flowed also, kind of depending on needs and what time I had to give. But it was and still is, you know, a group of students who come together on a central theme of like, yeah, they're curious about interrogating their own fields for where social impact can or doesn't or should come around. And even what is social impact? What does that mean? And kind of seeing different examples in our community and on campus and doing some things together. And So the Social Impact Scholars, I was more, had a smaller role of involvement, but things like that. And then the EcoReps program that I created here in 2011, that's like my pure joy. I like working with a small group of students on kind of a central theme of care and wanting to, and active care. Like, what do we do with this? We see an issue, we want to do something about it, has really been, I think, one of the, you know, great hallmarks of the opportunities that I got to work with here. And it's a little, you know, it's different than a class or even a club, because you might only see those students for one semester in a class. Some of these students I've worked with all 4 years that they've been here. And so the bonds and of that are just are really, really, really special. And so that's where I go. A little choked up, but that's truly what I've loved about my time here.
So how does the EcoRep program work? Are students paid for their participation?
Yeah, so it is technically a job. Students can either get hired as work study or hourly, so their financial status does not matter. And so they get, it's just what box gets checked on their hiring form is the only differential. And they apply and go through a group interview process. And what's really been cool is the evolution over the, 11, 12 years that the program has been here is we now have this tiered leadership. And so the returning students get to have a lot of say it, they do the recruiting and the interviewing and the deciding of who to invite into the team. And that is really challenging when we're trying to, you know, have as diverse a group and kind of geographically diverse across campus, different majors, gender representation, like you name it. We try to build this team and they're like, this is really hard. Yeah, it is. So we have kind of the first year student can be an eco rep. So we have like the new team, and then a core of returners, those who choose to return. Some of those returners opt to be kind of second tier level leaders that we call eco rep area coordinators. And then some choose to be, and it's something, it's been a captain or co-captain, and they're really responsible for the week-to-week meeting facilitation. They work with me on kind of the plan for the calendar of the semester, inviting meeting guests, taking care of a lot of the logistics. It's sort of like a class in that there is a curriculum for the semester. We have different themes just so that there are six throughout the year in waste, transportation, energy, food, water, and conscious consumption, not necessarily in that order. And they all give a bit of context about like international context, maybe national, maybe state, and then what is happening here on campus. What do students have the opportunity to learn and do something about? So it is very much focused on the residential student experience, what they have in their powers of capability of decision making, turning stuff off, buying or not buying something, eating or not eating something, throwing something away or not creating that waste in the first place. So we're not, you know, we focus on those types of behaviors. So they learn that content. They also learn a bunch of skills about event planning, communication and outreach, how to table effectively, and then put those all together, and they get to really kind of pick and choose from a menu of tasks that are kind of part of their weekly work. They choose on events to put on. They run the Swap Shop, which is this fabulous resource on campus that also was a student creation of like, hey, could we do this? We found some space. We found some racks and shelves, and it is this free thrift store on campus that is a wonderful, sometimes underutilized and hidden resource, but those who know about it love it. And so the eco reps are responsible for folding t-shirts and putting away donations and making it, you know, a neat space. So they've really taken that on as a big project. And then, you know, different kind of activities or just different engagement ways, whether it's a challenge. We used to do a month long. We called it the Kilowatt Challenge. We did that for like 6 or 7 years. That was kind of an energy reduction competition between res halls. So I really try to find and continually try to find the balance between structure and creativity and kind of choose your own, because we know that some structure has to be there, because it's really hard to just be like, what do you want to do? I don't know. So, and kind of building off of what people want to learn, what they want to do, what they care about. And it's just been a phenomenal opportunity, and the students who have been involved through the years are amazing. They represent all everything, all majors, all gender identities, different racial groups, class years, economic background, like really diverse in all the ways, groups who all have this common care and interest in sustainability to some degree. Some of them are like, I think I like this. I don't really know much about it, but I want to learn more. Others are like, this is how I grew up. Of course, this is what I do. It's what I do when I want to grow up, all these things. So it's just been so fun to kind of shepherd that program and those students along, and they're fabulous. And so there's now a group at this point of just around 100 students who have served at least 2 semesters as eco reps. Most of them, I ran the numbers earlier, it was something like, and I couldn't find the story for everybody, but it was something around like 85 to 90% stayed through graduation from Champlain College. So really high retention rate and really high engagement rate. And it's fun to kind of see over the years of From this very unknown, like there were six of them to start, to now of like, oh yeah, the Icarops, of course. So that's very cool.
That's great. So are there other ways that you interact with students that you haven't described?
Something else that I've really enjoyed doing is kind of being a visiting class person for different projects. And so for years, and like a decade now, probably, the corporate social responsibility class in the Stiller School of Business has had their midterm project is basically a green revolving fund pitch project. And so I've gone into every one of those classes and heard every pitch, and given feedback, given resources, given data, so that they can build their pitches. Not all of those, in fact, most of them have not actually gone to the Green Revolving Fund, but some of them have, and I note them all down, and it has been something that we've come back to do just as a sort of a mini focus group, do like what are students interested in, like what are they seeing as key things. Some years it's been really heavy on mental health and well-being. Sometimes it's been really heavy on like bicycles, you know. It's so that's been fun. I go into a lot of environmental studies and policy classes and kind of be the point person for those and others who are doing any kind of campus related sustainability projects, just to kind of liaise and again connect them with the right resource people on campus or data sets and different things. So going into classes, and then I've just on my own or additionally I've taught different classes throughout my time here. I developed and taught for four or five years the Foundations of Ecology class, which is in ITS and is a requirement for environmental studies and policy majors. I taught once or twice an elective called The Environmental Impacts of Consumerism. I guess technically that was an EHS. And then for 2 years, I taught a new Core 104 class called Making a Sense of Place. So I I was a CHAMP 101 facilitator this year for that new program. So yeah, I love engaging with students kind of in and out of the classroom. It's been a lot of fun. Mostly.
So maybe that leads into the next question here. Thinking about your work at Champlain, what are your proudest accomplishments?
Yeah, I'll go with, you know, the Icarops program has just been, I mean, there's been so many things, and just as the memories with jogging around, like the green walk signs and class visits and different things. Yeah, the Icarops program is definitely, I think, the biggest thing that I'm really proud of. You know, so that was something that I did at UVM for 4 years. It actually was the focus of my doctoral studies. My dissertation became a manual for different campuses to kind of start similar programs. And just recently this year, a colleague and I from Tufts did kind of a retrospective of 20 years later, because these programs have been around now for about 20 years. Like, are what kind of impacts are they making? Short story, a good one. So I knew that was something that I wanted to do here. I've been really glad that I was able to do that. And the students that I've gotten to know and work especially closely with the different co-captains and captains throughout the year and area coordinators, they're just phenomenal. They're so motivated and inspiring to me, and have helped, you know, work is not always fun and great, but they would always kind of buoy me back up if there was ever a low moment of like, right, we're working together and this is very cool. And they've perpetually kept me 19 years old, which is sometimes a good thing, even though I still miss some of the references or many of them. But yeah, that has been a lot of fun.
That's great. Where do you spend your time at Champlain?
Physically or mentally?
You can answer that question however you
want.
Gosh,
well, that's an interesting question. I'll start with physically, because this has been a funny story of like thinking about the evolutions of my job. It's been also evolutions of my office. So when I came, Champlain had off-release space at 212 Battery Street. So I was down there for a year or two. And then that's when Lakeside was being built and the idea that most people would move there. But I was like, no, I'm supposed to be engaging with students. I need to be on campus. So I then came, because there was an empty space and it was just one person, to main part of SCIF. And then I was there for a couple of years, and I can't remember what else. Oh, I think a group of people were going to be moved in over there. Was that the event center or somebody moved in over there? And they needed more space than just me. So then I went to the third floor of Perry Hall, which is really not an office, but like an open area. It was amazing, like a fishbowl. And Nick was there with me when he started for a little while. It was a great place to watch squirrels in the oak tree. And then somebody else was going to be moved there, so I got booted from there. And the worst one, this was like to the basement of Ireland. I was there for about 2 months, and it was like a bunker. My phone didn't work. There were no windows. I had no idea what time of day it was, and that did not fly for me. And then that kind of aligned up with the current space where I am, SCIF Annex, opening up. And so I've been here since then, which is great because you get to see the sunset, get to hear children playing on Edmund's grounds. You see like the preschool kids walking with their rope down along the sidewalk. It's been a great place to be. So I'm very grateful. So those physical spaces, and it's also been really nice because often I'm out and about visiting different classes and different meetings, different events. I'm kind of more centralized areas. And so this has been also a good respite to kind of come back and focus and do that. And it's been a nice space to have my student team meetings and kind of student employee workspace. So that's been nice. So that's my kind of where I spend my physical time. And I'd say my mental or work time, it kind of shifts almost seasonally, and I do have a month by month. Here's what I do, because sometimes I only do something once a year, like our greenhouse gas inventory. It's really kind of a one time a year project. So different things will ebb and flow on the day to day, you know, back to school time. It's a lot of recruiting students and student orientations and faculty orientations, different events going on through the years that might need time, more of the tracking, like the greenhouse gas inventory or annual report at the end of the year. So it kind of depends. No 2 days are the same. I'm a little bit here and a little bit there.
Who is your community at Champlain?
I'd say everybody. I think that is something that I've really loved about this work, is it truly is meant to be institution-wide. And so it's everyone's job, it's everyone's responsibility. They might not know that. And I have loved that opportunity to get to know folks from every corner of the institution. I mean, every corner. With the exception as much as Champlain College Online, because that has been a different, although, you know, some of our staff who are here physically, we've worked on a little bit, but I will say that's one area I haven't spent a lot of time with. But so that's my kind of work community, and I see those touching on all of that. I'd say, you know, the kind of sustained Champlain folks who have been involved throughout the years on different committees. And so those are part of my community. My student employees and ECO reps, definitely part of that. We have, and actually it's mostly faculty and women. We've called ourselves the Sustainability Sisters, who have been really thinking about how to integrate sustainability into the curriculum for a long time. So that's Val Esposito and Robin Collins and Cheryl Casey and Nicole Morris and Kristen Wolf, Lindsay Godwin. So pretty awesome folks. So I have felt a lot of community here at my time here, and in different pockets in different ways.
Yeah. That's great. Has your experience at Champlain been different from how you imagined it would be?
Well, I think I knew that it would evolve because I that's the nature of kind of campus sustainability has evolved. And so again, I think we've kind of had this parallel track, both our campus and me as a campus sustainability professional. So I think I knew it would never kind of be the same thing. I don't know that I anticipated what it would turn into or could. So
yeah. Has working at Champlain shaped your sense of who you are?
Shaped, yeah, probably. I think, yeah, there's definitely an influence. And I think it's been mutual, actually. I think it's been reciprocal, let's put it that way. Because I think I have been able to maintain a strong sense of who I am and what I believe in. And I've really welcomed the opportunity to learn with and from others here, again, students, faculty, and staff. So I've definitely grown and evolved by knowing people and learning alongside them. And I felt like I've been able to help others learn, grow, and evolve by kind of sticking to what I think is right and important.
When you look back on your time at Champlain, what do you think you'll remember the most and why?
It's so hard because there just have been so many wonderful moments and people. I'll just have to stick with the people because I think that, and when I've met new employees, like I get to do a new employee orientation every month or most months. And when I was staff council president for 4 years, like I really made it, it was my business and I really made it my business to like check in with people and see how they are. And it really has been that sense of community among these kind of the colleagues and peers and students too, in a degree that makes sense. And so, yeah, I think those kind of relationships and connections are something that I will take with me for certain.
What advice do you have for current and future Champlain College employees?
Well, I always encourage getting involved in things that you care about or like see it there. And so, again, I was staff council president for 4 years. I've been a long time, like since my first year, involved in different committees of staff council. It is such a fabulous way to get to know other people across the campus. So you might work with, you know, someone from the library or from Champlain College Online or from physical plant. Maybe you've never had the chance to kind of get outside of your office or your own little team. Such a good way to do that. I will say one of the things I am proud of and a way to get involved was kind of raising my hand one time and asking then President Finney, hey, could we have some sort of employee service day? And he's like, yes, probably, let's figure that out. And we did and do and have been able to do that. You know, COVID took a dip out of that too for a little bit, but that was such a great way of doing good work out in projects in the community and getting to know people in a different way from different teams and whatnot. So I really encourage people to get up from their own internal team, get involved in staff council or some of the other just fun events, the networking events, the holiday party, like showing up to that stuff. If you're a person who likes, you know, chatting with others and getting to know people, find your way to do that. And there's a full spectrum of involvement that way. But yeah, I think that's been, it really makes the work experience one more layer better.
What advice do you have for current and future Champlain College students?
Also, get involved. Get outside of your major or you know, your expected areas and try something new. Get a student was explaining to me their capstone project last night, and they're a graphic design student, about, you know, the importance of getting outside, and of course, this is very, very true. And I think that's very, very true for our students too, is like, go outside. Even if it's, you're not a hiker or a skier, like take a walk around the neighborhood. We live in such a beautiful space, and being out, breathing air and getting a little sunshine on your face is so important to everyone's full well-being. And, you know, finding a way to get involved in a club or organization, finding that passion of the thing that you care about and doing something about it. So that active engagement and sticking up for something you care about can do worlds of good for lots of things. So highly, highly recommend folks to do something and go outside.
So we've come to the end of my prepared questions, but I wanted to give you the chance to add anything else that you have thought of.
Well, let's see here. No, I think, it's really been a wonderful ride, and been able to really, I think, leave a positive mark, you know, again, reciprocally. I look back at the evolution of our physical space when we used to have a bunch of parking lots and now we have buildings, to the different people that have come. I mean, I remember Diana Augusta, who was the assistant in the president's office. She pulled me aside one time. She's like, you know, Christina, we used to know everything about people. We knew when they got a new car, when they had a new baby, or all this stuff. And like, I think that has changed as we've grown a bit bigger. That has been a little harder to attain. And yet there is still that notion of like the people who work here really do like and care about each other, which is not found everywhere. And I think that's a very special thing. And hopefully that's something that keeps living on. And I'm sure it will. But thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This has been really great. I really appreciate all of your insight and reflections and your time, of course, as well.
Thank you, Erica.